Pentagon in your DOD report has been warning for years that the decade-long budget caps Congress set in place 4 years ago won't work, especially if the Pentagon wants to execute the defense strategy that the administration is proposing right now. With the sequester set to return in fiscal 2016, officials say they'll try to make things a bit less abstract and publish a report that details exactly what would happen to individual bases and weapon systems with a 30-couple billion dollar cut. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, writing about DOD's sequestration messaging strategy as part of this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook. And I'm struck, Jared, in reading your notebook this week, which is fantastic all the time, about the level of granularity that the Pentagon wants to go to, Jared.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do need some granularity from their perspective, and that messaging strategy is something that's still very much a work in progress. We don't know how detailed they're going to get, but that strategy has been sort of evolving for the past several years because the Pentagon, of course, has been talking in just about every congressional hearing for the past, really, three, almost 4 years about how sequestration-level funding just doesn't do the job. And the best that they've been able to get out of Congress so far are just these 1 or 2 year reprieves. So this report DOD is thinking about releasing would get down into the weeds instead of talking about, you know, the high level effects like impacts to readiness, overall numbers of personnel, that kind of thing. It would say, you know, we would have to buy this many fewer of this weapons platform that you, member of Congress, care about, or acquisition system X would most likely have to get canceled. And Francis, you'll remember the Pentagon actually did sort of a small version of this last year. It published about a 30, 35 page-ish report giving some of those details, but it got almost no attention, partially because sequestration wasn't really an issue last year, because remember, we were already in year two of that two-year agreement to raise the budget caps under the Ryan-Murray agreement a couple years ago. So here's Mike McCord, the DOD comptroller, talking with a few of us reporters earlier this week about why DOD is going to give it another go.
And so we will, in all likelihood, produce and submit a similar document this time with similar level of detail, and it may have more, you know, it may engender more discussion this year just because sequester is a real possibility this year, unlike last year. We need to show the new secretary, of course, a draft document like that and talk with him about different ways, if that's the best way to handle it or not. And that's something we haven't been able to do in his one day on the job so far. I think there'll be some opportunities to talk about it as it affects the department, as in terms of mission output, not just in terms of as important as it are, as kind of the inputs and what it means to cuts at a particular base or cuts to, you know, a furlough or something like that. I think that's something that the chairman and the vice chairman would probably like to be able to talk about a little bit about, is how it affects the joint force.
Again, that's Mike McCord, the DOD comptroller. And Francis, really, there's another reason why this sort of report might carry some more weight this year than it did last year. Because remember, last year, DOD decided to propose two separate budgets, or at least submit two separate budgets, one of which was, along the funding levels that the president's budget was proposing. And the second one was sort of what they would do if the budget caps remained in place. They, deliberated about doing that again this year, but ultimately decided not to because it was just such a huge burden on the workforce to build two budgets last year, and ultimately it didn't seem to make much difference anyway. So that's a second reason why publishing this report this year would make more of an impact, they think, because it would really be the only written documentation of what sequestration would do, aside from all the hearings that we're going to have over the next few months.
I think this is a wise idea, and it's something that I've heard suggested, I mean, ever since really the Republicans took over the House of Representatives in 2010, was not just for the Pentagon, but for all the agencies to take their budgets to the Hill and say, here are the things that we would have to get rid of if you give us this number. Now tell us why we shouldn't cut the budget. And there are political ramifications there as well as mission ramifications. So it's interesting to see this. Bob Hale was on the program earlier in the week and talked about this very issue, how he executed it. And he talked about that burden to the workforce the way that they did that before. The comment that you report in the notebook from Mike McCord this time around that I thought was particularly striking was when he said 2013 was kind of a low watermark of badness in terms of having the threat of sequester, then the actual sequester, then the shutdown. Then we moved more money around than we ever have trying to fix the worst aspects of the sequester.
Right.
So he makes it sound like it was as bad as it could get in 2013, except till now it could get even worse.
It could get almost as bad. And I say almost as bad because there's a lot less expectation, or I mean, there's a lot less likelihood that unexpected things will happen. Remember, back in 2013, nobody actually thought sequestration would get triggered. So everyone was still spending at their normal spending levels. So that's one thing. At this point, everybody's already operating at reduced funding levels. Secondly, we know what the Budget Control Act caps are. So in order for an actual sequestration to happen again, which means that everybody's budget gets cut by the same amount, Congress would have to actively decide to appropriate funding above the budget caps without lifting the budget caps. And that's, even as crazy as the whole sequestration thing is, that would be 10 times crazier. It's very hard to see how or why they would do that. So there's a lot more understanding of what's ahead, even if the budget caps stay in place. So again, I think that translates into less, as he said, pandemonium for the financial management workforce, while they're also, as we've talked about before, trying to get ready for an audit for the first time in the meantime.
Here's the other wrinkle that you write about that I find interesting, the dynamic that I think is interesting. You write, OMB's told DOD, the State Department, and the intelligence community to draw up a plan to move OCO money into the base budget by the end of this year. Now, in that conversation with Bob Hale, I also had Dov Zakheim, another former comptroller at the Pentagon, on that discussion. And that's kind of the scenario that I painted. Why couldn't you just write stuff into the OCO that you couldn't fit into the base? And he gave a very reasoned, logical argument as to why that wouldn't work long term. But I take away from what you're writing in the notebook that may be looked on as a potential short-term solution.
Yeah, that long-term point is really important because everyone knows OCO is going to go away at some point. And we should explain for listeners that OCO is the Overseas Contingency Operations budget that was originally drawn up for Iraq and Afghanistan. The reason it matters in this context is that it's completely exempt from the caps that exist under the Budget Control Act. So in theory, DOD and Congress could stuff as much money as they wanted into there and completely bypass sequestration if they wanted to. But again, as you point out, that's going to go away at some point. So the Office of Management and Budget has told DOD, the State Department, USAID, the intelligence community, that they need to come up with a plan by the end of this year to start transitioning all of that money from OCO into base. But if the budget caps stay in place, that plan makes absolutely no sense because there's a lot of stuff stuffed into OCO right now that really has nothing to do with Iraq or Afghanistan or any of these ongoing operations over the past decade. So transitioning all of that money into this existing capped budget would be completely infeasible because there's still more than $50 billion in OCO right now, and the administration's asking for just another 30 more in the base budget right now. So stuffing an additional 50 in there would be completely unworkable if the caps don't go away.
Federal News Radio's DOD reporter Jared Serbu going inside the reporter's notebook. And another item you have in the notebook this week is kind of a follow-up on an item we've talked about in the past. You reported on the comments by Randall Culpepper, the Air Force's top official for a services acquisition, you write, and you reported him as saying that he would be leading a task force that was going to examine low-price technically acceptable use throughout the department. There's a little bit of a discrepancy, though, apparently, as to what you think you reported and what you believe you reported is what it looks like to me.
Well, I'm still pretty confident in what I reported, but
right.
But I must be honest. This is an issue that I frankly wish would just go away from the perspective of a defense reporter. It's like trying to mediate a fight between two of your kids. You've got industry on one side insisting that LPTA is the worst scourge in the history of defense acquisition, and the government on the other side saying it's not. And frankly, most of it is based on anecdotes and very small slivers of data, and neither one of them's ever going to change their position. And that's why I was a bit excited a few weeks back when we heard from Mr. Culpepper saying that he'd been assigned to do this department-wide review of how LPTA was being used. And I wrote about it at the time. You and I talked about it, as you said.
Yes.
But that story evidently set off alarm bells in the Pentagon. The top leadership on the acquisition side of the House really does not like even the suggestion that there might be even a data-gathering effort on LPTA, because for them, the rhetoric rhetoric is, anyway, that it's a settled issue. And frankly, there's a very recent GAO report that backs up their position. But that position is that LPTA is being used where it makes sense, where you've got a very clear set of defined requirements and you're not willing to pay for anything more, and we're not using it for anything else. Here's Shay Assad, the director of defense pricing, sort of summing up that position.
You know, it's been sampled. GAO sampled. They can come in again. They're welcome to do it. And it's just not a problem that we see. You know, one of the things, we had a discussion with industry in early November. We had them down at DAU for a full day. Mm-hmm. Some of this we talked about. And the fact is, we're not going to apologize for making price more important. And we think that there's enough evidence to dispel the myth that we're out there, you know, demanding that our people use LPTA techniques. And so you can say, well, how many times do you have to examine it and say, look, the data just says we're not doing what it is you say you're doing.
Now, we recorded that interview more than a month ago, Francis, and Assad wasn't able to clarify for me at the time what Culpepper actually meant when he said he was leading a review team on LPTA. We finally got a statement back from the Pentagon in writing. We'll publish the whole thing on the notebook, but the upshot of it is, again, there is no LPTA review, but the other details are that it is part of Better Buying Power 3.0, and Culpepper is looking at all aspects of source selection methodologies, and LPTA may or may not be a part of that. So this LPTA review is not actually an LPTA review.
I will note that and underline it with a red pen. And I will also ask, I thought, with all due respect to Mr. Jinman, wasn't he leaving sometime soon?
I mean, he is leaving. Yep. This is his last month on the job. Okay. Actually, we have an exit interview. I'm so glad you asked. Scheduled for next week. So stay tuned for that. That will be in an upcoming edition of our Wednesday show on DoD.